You're listening to PolarPod from the Oxford University Polar Forum.
Dear listener, this episode was originally recorded as a closing section to our podcast on mining in Sami Land. And if you haven't listened to that already, I recommend you go there first before then tuning into this. Thank you.
I'm now back in the virtual studio with Sam. Hi, Sam.
Hey, Roberta.
And we're just going to try and digest some of that story that you just gave us, which is really interesting. Thank you so much for putting that together.
Thank you.
And I think the thing that struck me the most about that was that central tension that these indigenous Sami communities, they are being really badly affected by climate change in the Arctic. But these potential solutions of mining more minerals to make renewable energies to reduce the climate change that they're going to face in the future are causing damage too. So they're sort of stuck between a rock and a hard place, and it doesn't seem particularly fair.
No, not at all, especially when you consider that they didn't cause climate change, right? So, you know, from their perspective, it's like they're seeing their way of life be affected by something they didn't cause. And then by our attempts to fix that problem, and that, you know, we're expecting them to be happy with us industrializing their land to fix this thing that we've caused. And the other thing to add is that indigenous cultures are generally much more land-based cultures than non-indigenous ones.
So you mean, when you say land-based, you mean sort of their livelihoods are based off of, you know, farming on the land, or reindeer herding, or whatever.
There's an economic dimension, but there's also a spiritual dimension as well. They've been living with and on the land for generations and generations, and we heard about those oral traditions, indigenous knowledge. It's land-based, and it's about how to live on the land in a way that's sustainable.
Yeah. But another thing that I feel it's important to kind of remember and acknowledge, and Ola Anti did mention this, was that, you know, this isn't a new thing. You know, mining has been affecting these communities already in the past. And not only that, fossil fuel infrastructure as well has historically had big impacts on indigenous communities. You know, there is oil exploration in the Arctic, for example, and that in and of itself and the infrastructure associated with it can have negative impacts on indigenous communities, and does, and wider than the Arctic. You know, in non-Arctic Canada, you know, people might have heard of things like the oil pipelines that are kind of being contested by indigenous communities there.
Yeah, that's such a great point.
So this problem isn't new, and it isn't specific to new and renewable technologies. And so I suppose that just highlights that the answer isn't to not transition to new and renewable technologies, but perhaps to see this as an opportunity that, while this is maybe putting more pressure on particular areas, perhaps it could be an opportunity to rethink how we negotiate these tricky trade-offs in a more equitable way.
Yeah, and there is a lot of awareness now around this thing called the just transition.
Yeah.
And you might have heard of it with regards to coal mines and coal workers and making sure that, you know, they've got jobs to go into after the retirement of a coal mine. That's transitioning out, so transitioning out of carbon intensive technologies that we no longer need. And then there's transition in, which is kind of this example that we've spoken about in this episode. And with the greater focus on these issues now, and the fact that we're identifying these as big problems, does give us an opportunity to try and reimagine how these things should look in the future. So from that perspective, there is an optimistic side to this, like, very complex and challenging story.
Yeah. And another thing that sprang to mind for me was the idea of kind of reusing and recycling some of these metals. So, for example, I often see things that say when your phone dies, you should recycle it instead of throwing it away, because you can get some of these metals out and that might reduce the amount of mining that we have to do. So to what extent will reusing and recycling things help to prevent having to open lots more of these mines, and could we solve the problem that way?
Yeah, it's a great question. The unfortunate answer is during this growth phase of the energy transition where we're rapidly replacing carbon-intensive technologies with renewables. And for instance, let's pick the example of cars. So we're rapidly replacing internal combustion engine cars with EVs.
That's electric vehicles.
Yeah, EVs, electric vehicles. During this growth phase, recycling isn't going to make much of a dent at all. Just to illustrate that, to get to net zero by 2050, the IEA, the International Energy Agency, estimates that by 2030, we'll need to be selling or buying 55 million EVs a year globally. Right now, we're at about 6.6 million in 2021. And if we think about the life of an electric car or a battery in an electric car, their lifetime's about 15 years. So in 2030, when we need to be making those 55 million electric cars a year, we'll be retiring EVs that came out around 2015. And how many electric vehicles do you think were sold in 2015?
Right. Okay. So in 2015, I guess, what, in the UK or in the world?
No, in the world. In the whole world.
Okay. So in the whole world, in 2015, I reckon like 1 million electric vehicles?
Yeah, not far off. Yeah, so about 500,000.
Okay, right. Yeah. Okay.
And, you know, you can see the magnitude of difference there. That's 100 times fewer than the cars that you're making in 2030. Yeah. So you're not going to be able to, even if your recycling efficiency was 100%, you'd only be filling like 1% of the demand. So it's just that we've got this exponential growth in EVs that's required, and we're going to be retiring those cars 10 to 20 years later. So the growth in the materials that can come from recycling is lagging behind by quite a significant way, which just means that it won't play a big role over the next few decades in terms of meeting that demand.
So we need to recycle now, and we need to recycle this stuff in future, but it's just not enough on its own to fulfill the demand that we're going to need to transition to electric vehicles.
Yeah, it's not enough for that growth phase, but eventually once things sort of stabilize out, then yes, it will be making a big contribution.
But also, it seems to me like it's very ambitious that we're going to be able to find enough of these metals in time to kind of make these new technologies to the extent that we're going to need to for the transition to net zero. And so this kind of...
Well, we sorry to interrupt you, Roberta, we might not be able to find them, right? We might not be able to get enough lithium or cobalt, whatever, out of the ground to make all these electric vehicles. Like, there is a real threat of that. And that's kind of why there is so much pressure on mining and the mining industry to deliver all these metals. Like, if you just think through the lens of an electric vehicle company, they need these metals to make all the cars. And so there's a huge amount of pressure on the mining companies to deliver those metals. And it's quite probable that the supply chains will break at some point, and we won't be able to meet that demand.
Yeah, and so that brings into question whether or not we can continue to behave as we're doing now. Like, we need to consider whether or not it's sustainable for us to all have a car, for example, or whether, you know, the transition to electric vehicles also needs to come with behavioral changes, like, you know, not everybody having a car and different models of how we get around as well. And I think sometimes, you know, we hope that technology will sort it all out for us, and that's all we need to do is invest in the technology. But to be realistic about the problem, you know, there are different systems that we might need to be considering of how we live our lives.
We need to get to net zero. That's an absolute must. Like, that's a climate truth. But of course, there are different pathways to net zero. Yeah. There are some which involve a lot more consumption of goods and much more driving around and much more energy than others. And I guess it depends on what you want your future to look like. Do you want it to be... Do you want to expand the number of people that have access to electricity and stuff like that? I think, of course, I think we would want to do that. But then also, maybe those of us in the developed world should be thinking about using less or consuming less energy. I think, while not wanting to get into the whole growth degrowth debate, we do need to think about what exactly we need and respect the planetary boundaries while doing that.
Mm. Yeah, and this is the whole kind of point of, I suppose, this podcast as well, is to suggest that actually the technical details are intrinsically linked to the sort of societal discussions that we need to be having about all of these issues. And we all have to kind of get involved in the sort of what should be democratic decisions about the way that we do want to take this, that still achieves a net zero outcome.
Right. Because then it's they're not just concepts, they're not just statistics. They have a real physical impact on the world, and a local impact as well. And that's especially true with mining.
Yeah, yeah. And so, Sam, we've come to the end of your story that you brought us today, but I don't think we're quite at the end of the bigger picture story yet.
Mm.
And how that story ends is really important to not just Olaanti and his Sami community, but actually to all of us. And so,
in many ways, it's just the beginning, isn't it? If you think about the energy transition, like, we are still in very early days. This is going to be one of those big themes that it's going to be there and happening for decades, and will require so much careful thought and effort. And I don't know if we've all got our heads around that yet, but hopefully it kind of comes across through some of these stories, the sorts of challenges that we are facing.
Yeah, yeah. As we close on this episode, let's thank our guests, Olaanti Labba, Anna Bidgood, Phil Rieger, and Charlotte Chamberlain. Charlotte Chamberlain provided technical expertise and guidance to this show. Reporting, editing, and original music by Sam Cornish. Your co-hosts are Sam Cornish and me, Roberta Wilkinson. See you next time for a story that will change the way you think about wildlife conservation.